One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com. Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Wrestling's second favorite Barry.
Hey, I'm ready. Right foot back.
Begins with a U. It ends with an A. Has a meal in your shoulder.
Monday Night Raw, number one. All right.
Welcome, everyone, to the Cultaholic Classic Raw Review as the other Cultaholic lads are preparing for Double or Nothing. We are here via our Icapro-powered DeLorean during the new generation era where nothing is quite literally double. And who be we? I be fake Geordie, radio presenter without portfolio, former Cultaholic heavyweight champion Tom Campbell, proprietor of Isolation Station 24601. And I am here via the power of fiber optic broadband with the bear in the big blue bar cage, the head pen of Cultaholic, the man who, if there was a short run of pencils in the United States, as there was with toilet paper and essentials during the start of the quarantine period, during the start of the pandemic, wouldn't make a difference to his life at all because he uses a pen. He gets it right every time. He is Justin Henry, and he is out of Africa.
Wasn't that a movie?
It was a movie. As I was making myself a drink before this podcast started, I just thought, it would be funny if I just said he's out of Africa to see if you notice.
wait, don't tell me. Who was the actress in that? Jeez, I know she was in Romancing the Stone. What was her name?
Oh, okay. Let's play the game. And it says, it's time for our relatable audience game. Name the actress from Out of Africa. Right, okay. I'm going to give you some clues. A disorder around your...
Never mind. You know, I realize it's Meryl Streep. I was thinking of somebody else.
Ah, fair enough. I was gonna say a disorder around your throat is called a what throat? And you were gonna go strep. Streep! Meryl Streep!
No, I was gonna go Kathleen Turner throat.
I was gonna go Samantha. Samantha bronchitis?
I've never heard of such a thing.
How are you doing, Justin Henry? Are you good?
I'm doing quite well. I'm just looking forward to Double or Nothing at this point.
Yeah, which is at time of record. Well, obviously, time of recording is the day before, but the time you are listening to this, it is mere hours away. I'm really excited because I don't watch as much AEW as I should because my job at Cultaholic is I do Raw graded, I do NXT graded, so I don't always have the time to watch the entirety of episodes of Dynamite. But Saturday night, at midnight, I'm blocking out. I'm watching Double or Nothing. I'm really up for it. It should be a really fun show.
Same here. And I don't know if you saw my tweet that I put out on Thursday night, but I put out a very fascinating statistic that kind of surprised me. This will only be the second time, not counting Royal Rumble matches, that Jericho and Matt Hardy are in the same pay-per-view match.
Wow, really?
Yep. Now, without looking for the tweet, can you name what year the first time took place?
1999.
You're kind of close. 2001.
Oh, okay.
It was the tag team turmoil match that Jericho and Benoit won in order to face Austin and Hunter the next night on Raw. This would have been Judgment Day 01. And Jericho and Matt weren't even in the same ring together.
Oh, gosh, they've just avoided each other. Star-crossed lovers eventually find each other.
Pretty much. The Hardys got eliminated by X-Factor before succumbing to Jericho and Benoit.
I'm gonna give an unpopular wrestling opinion here. I loved their theme music.
X-Factor? I love it, too.
Yeah, Uncle Cracker.
I got everything I ever wanted, and I'll never give that back.
I changed my mind. I don't like it.
You basically... Okay.
I'm kidding. I love it even more now. There's three things that we need to celebrate today. So one is Double or Nothing, which is in a couple of hours' time, at time of listening to this. Today is my one-year anniversary of doing on-screen stuff at Cultaholic, but the true blue fans of Cultaholic will know, but the true fans will know that it's longer than that, because me and you have been crushing this for almost 100 weeks now.
Take that, Bischoff.
Exactly, Bischoff. This has nearly lasted as long as your reign. But it's also, more importantly than anything else, it is John Eiley's birthday today.
Photoshop John, 1 year older.
Justin, would you like to sing happy birthday to John Eiley? Okay. One, two, one, two, three.
Happy birthday to you. Why are you going so slow, man? I feel like you're lagging intentionally.
Because there's a delay. And it's like I'm socially distancing from your singing.
Well, after the X Factor song, I can't blame you.
You know what? Bugger it. John, happy birthday, mate. You're a legend. Thank you very much for bringing joy into our worlds.
John, we tried our best. Happy birthday. Thanks for all the Photoshops. You are the man.
John, could you please Photoshop us bringing you loads of really expensive gifts?
You could show us knocking someone over and stealing it from them. It doesn't matter who.
That's fine. That's fine. You can do that. But no, but please take time to wish at John Eiley on Twitter a very happy birthday.
Us glorified grave robbers.
We really are, aren't we? But John, you're a legend. Happy birthday to you, matey. We'll get into the rigors of this week's show in just a moment. But where and when are we this week, Justin Henry?
Well, just part two of a TV taping. It is Monday, October the 3rd of 1994. This was taped 1 week earlier. It is Utica, New York at the, what is it, Memorial Hall, Convention Hall, something or other.
Before we get into the show, right, what we like to do is just give you a little bit of a look around the houses of the week in wrestling in this particular year, thanks to the power of the Wrestling Observer from Dave Meltzer. So I've been onto the archives and got a few juicy highlights from this particular week in professional wrestling. WCW taped a whole bunch of Saturday night shows just a few days before this week's episode of Monday Night Raw. The Warlord, Sergeant Slaughter, and Tito Santana were all backstage looking for work. Warlord was telling everyone he was off the steroids for the past 18 months, but people felt like he was insulting their intelligence. That was the big takeaway, and Meltzer talked a bit about that. But there was one line in this one sort of throwaway line from the tapings that has a lot of historical significance, because he just writes in amongst this, in lesser news, he didn't put in lesser news, I've written that, John Paul Levesque debuted wearing a Louis XIV outfit.
I say, wonder if this has future implications.
I wonder if it will. This could potentially be the man that takes over wrestling. But who knows? Also, in this particular week, Todd Pettingill, who isn't on Raw this week, sadly, or yes, not so much. when he's not on the WWF shows, he is the morning DJ on WOLDDD. No, he's the morning DJ on New York's WPLJ, along with Scott Shannon. Scott and Todd made a big name for themselves over there. They've been named as Billboard Magazine's top radio personalities of the year. Well done to Scott and Todd.
That was one hell of a bribe.
It really was. In terms of the other things in the wrestling world, Bobby Heenan underwent neck surgery just a couple of days before this. Isn't expected to miss much, if any, TV spots. I'm not quite sure why he was having neck surgery. I don't know whether you could know any more about this, Justin Henry.
Well, he'd had a broken neck for many, many years, actually, from just his time as a manager / wrestler, just taking bumps. And by 1991, he was in such pain, that's why he retired full-time as a manager to become a commentator on the regular, which is why he wasn't managing Flair. He wanted to, but he couldn't physically do it anymore, and it just took a while to have the surgery, because he was just, all that wear and tear over the years, he just wore his neck down to the point where it was either cracked or just outright broken.
I have some good news for a recurring guest on the Cultaholic Classic Raw Review, Sydney Zumbowitz. Oscar was off the road this week, so Mabel did the rapping himself. It appears that Mo is gone as well.
Well, spoiler alert, Mo is not gone. He shall return in a few months. But I like how Sydney's new gimmick now that we've firmly pushed upon her is that she's the biggest hater of men on a mission on planet Earth.
Someone has to be.
I guess.
ECW held a show 2 days before this at the ECW Arena. Some interesting players in this particular one. We saw Cactus Jack and Mikey Whipwreck beat the Public Enemy to retain the tag team titles. It was a match that fought all over the building. It was quite the spectacle. We saw Shane Douglas retain his ECW title, beating Too Cold Scorpio. Who ran in to attack Too Cold Scorpio, Justin Henry?
We'll see if they're helping Shane Douglas. I'm going to take a wild guess and say it was Dean Malenko.
It's good, but it's not the right answer. You chronicled this man's career just a couple of days ago. It was Matt Osborne as Born Again.
Oh, wow. I was thinking maybe this is the start of the triple threat, but then I realized it might happen for a little while longer. But yes, Matt Bourne, the original and therefore best Doink the Clown, which I'm sure you'll agree with.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, he very briefly had a run in ECW at this point where he played a Doink facsimile called Born Again, where he wore the bodysuit and some of the makeup around one eye, like he was the dog from the Little Rascals. But the thing was, he had like a split personality and he hated the Doink gimmick. And after his matches, he would put some of the clown accessories on his unconscious opponent as a way of trying to humiliate them, his way of taking out his anger toward that gimmick on his opponents. You know, angry at Vince for making him into a cartoon character and all that sort of bitterness. But it just didn't last, and he was gone from the company not long after.
And also from that ECW taping, Chris Benoit upset Sabu when the referee stopped the match because Sabu was coughing up blood. This was the planned finish, although Sabu was in a bad way at this point. The significance of this is that this actually predates what would happen between Benoit and Sabu by a good few months, or at least a month.
Oh, yes. I can't remember if that was November to Remember or Holiday Hell, but it was one of the two shows by the end of the year when Benoit earned his Crippler nickname in an unintentional fashion.
It was indeed. November to Remember, it was indeed. I'll give you a
hug. That's right.
Finally, on this one, a fun bit of news from The Observer. Honky Tonk Man said that he's been working as a PE coach for kindergarten through eighth grade over the past few years, and he was wearing his hair differently at school, so none of the students knew that Coach Farris was the Honky Tonk Man.
I can't imagine Honky as a gym teacher. I just can't.
No. If only there was somebody that could bring that image to life in our mind's eye.
Birthday boy.
Birth boy. Get on it.
Birth boy sounds worse. Sounds like some sort of like Hellboy type character.
Birth boy. John, once you've done Honky Tonk Man as a gym teacher, can you do Birth Boy? It's your superhero identity.
It's just John looking like Gollum, but covering him like afterbirth. The smell of candles. The earth is rank with it.
I smell like angel cake. and gifts I don't want.
Oh, we're off to a rip-roaring start this week.
Oh, we're off to the best start this week. So that is your wrestling world for this week. I now hand over to Justin Henry, who is going to talk us through this week's episode of Monday Night Raw.
I shall do my best. We got footage from King's Court last week with Bulldog shouting a lot.
They did well to trim this down, to be fair.
Well, yes, we had they left in the good parts, so this is a 3-second video. I did think it was interesting that on our No Way Out podcast that we did with our good friend Matthew Gregg of Botchamania, he brought up the concept of Oates and Garfunkel, i.e. the lesser half of two great teams or combinations. We are seeing Oates and Garfunkel here with the Bulldog and Neidhart. Mm-hmm. Still there, Tom?
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm listening to you intently.
Just make sure you don't fall asleep. I know it's...
I don't fall asleep until the match.
which we'll get to. So then we show footage from earlier tonight, also known as 7 days ago, when Neidhart and Owen pull up and just leave their car out in the middle of the parking lot. I don't think they have valets in Utica.
Why is Jim Neidhart wearing sunglasses when it's overcast?
because he wears his sunglasses at night so he can
nice.
Watch you live and weave and breathe your storylines. So keep in mind, Owen's still wearing Brett's shades, albeit up over his hair. So the obsession over Brett continues. Bulldog yells, or sorry, Neidhart yells about let the games begin in his usual non sequitur anvil way. Owen informs Bulldog that he's a mutt dog anyway as he walks off camera. This is quite a week to be discussing Owen after Dark Side of the Ring.
Oh gosh, yeah, it is. It really is. If you haven't watched it, I'll warn you, it's a rough watch. Say it best.
Mm-hmm. I knew pretty much 90% of the stuff that was in that documentary already, but just to watch it all put in that kind of context, it's both heartbreaking and infuriating. Well, more or less alternately so, and at times overlapping each other.
Mm.
But yes, it is highly recommended, and if you're one of the people out there who believes that Owen Hart should be in the WWE Hall of Fame, I think watching this will change your mind. Not so much that he doesn't deserve to be acknowledged, because he does deserve to be acknowledged, but the reasoning for why he shouldn't be makes all the sense in the world. So we have plugged this week's show. We have Bob Backlund in action with that great promo shot of him screaming like he's the guy from that. Is that a Van Gogh painting where the guy has his hands on his face and is screaming? The Scream or whatever?
It's Edvard Munch, The Scream.
You're right. I don't know my artist, so
it's
thank
fine.
You for that.
The Cultaholic Classic Painting Review has been postponed until we know more about art.
John, fire up the palette.
If anyone is going to do a Cultaholic Classic Painting Review, it's going to be John Eiley. We just review pieces of modern art or pieces of historical art.
And then John yells Justin when he wants me to write a blurb about a painting.
Yes.
See, it's the inverse. I can't get it. Doink is in action. We talk about Matt Bourne. Now we got to watch poor Ray Apollo live out Vince's dream of a happy clown. It's not Ray Apollo's fault.
I blame Ray Apollo.
Don't do that. The worst thing he ever did was play an apartheidist at Starrcade 90. never really that happened. Look it up.
I believe it. Incidentally, on the subject of Doink the Clown, if you haven't done so already, check out the sensational Remembering Doink the Clown video on our YouTube channel. That was excellent work, sir.
Yes, great work from Jack King, as always, on the voiceover. And I want to say, I don't know for sure, I should know this because I should be more responsible than this. I think it was our good friend Owen Walson on the edit. I think he usually does the rememberings, so unless there's a swerve thrown on there somewhere, I believe he did it.
Big love.
Great job from both.
Great job from everybody. It was brilliant. Really enjoyed it. If you haven't done so already. What's nice is because, more so than ever, because we are so far, because we're all working separately. I mean, obviously, Justin, that's, you know, your situation's the same. But for all of us, we're working separately. So we don't always sort of cross over with what projects we're working on. So that was a nice surprise for me when I thought, oh, so Doink the Clown video's been done. I didn't spot that as a thing. I've not been paying attention. So as a fan, I've always been a fan of Cultaholic. So I still get that buzz of, oh, they put a video up. And I enjoyed watching it.
I'm the same way, even though I write a lot of them. And it's like, let's see you. See what words they mispronounced this week. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, they do get some wrong, but usually I laugh more than anything. But yes, we have Doink in action. We have the women's tag match. Alundra Blaze and Heidi Lee Morgan versus Bull Nakano and Luna Vachon, also known as the entire women's division.
That is basically the entire division in one match, isn't it?
And Yokozuna will be on the King's Court for what I'm sure will be a riveting interview. I mean, speaking of riveting, we start with Oates versus Garfunkel, Davey Boy Smith versus Jim the Anvil Neidhart.
Oates versus Garfunkel. Do we use that analogy recently? We did, didn't we, on the No Way Out podcast? There was an Oates Garfunkel reference.
Yeah. Yes, we did. And that's the first thing I thought of when I saw this match was, I watched Brett versus Dynamite. I watched your Stampede matches. I watched that great Capital Center match they had in 85 for WWF. Now we get to watch your partners go at it. 9 years later.
Wow, thanks. Appreciate it.
Now, to be fair, this was not absolutely terrible. This was just merely semi-bad.
Oh, it was... Before we actually get into it, I have to say, we've joked about this, how, like, to cross the streams with the Cultaholic Classic SmackDown review, Bulldog has just left the timeline for the SmackDown review. And he has been a bit of a figure of fun for us, because he just doesn't give... he didn't give a toss in his final run in WWF, like, coming out in dirty jeans, just looked like he wanted to be anywhere but there. And when he turned up in 94, I was like, whoa, here we go, I can get out the old Bulldog joke book again. After the races we go. But you know what? You know what? This is what I realised this week. Regardless of when the bell rings, what happens, he looks like a star here. He looks like he cares. Mm-hmm. He comes out to the ring, and he's got flares going off with sound effects added to them, no less. He's got the tassels going on. He's got the big jacket. He just looks like a star. He looks like a... But obviously then he wrestles and then he talks and then we know otherwise. But he looks like a star. And he looks like he cares. And I can't get enough of that. Obviously then, as I said, until the bell rings.
Well, he definitely enhances the show just by being here. Bulldog, with the right opponent and in the right air, is capable of great, great things, i.e. Wembley Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
It just appeared that you and Matthew were just watching him, and he was basically a political hire. And the documentary makes that semi-clear, the Owen Dark side of the ring, why he was rehired in 99. Gee, I wonder.
Mm-hmm.
So, that having been said, my Bulldog was coming off a severe spinal injury. They left him in like a full body cast for a long time, and he should have been nowhere near a wrestling ring at that point.
Absolutely.
At least here, he is muscled to the gills. Gee, I wonder who won. I wonder what the verdict of that July trial was. But... at least he's mobile and can still go. Neidhart, not so much.
There's a bit of a morbid statistic for this match, which I didn't know whether you picked up on, but I certainly did.
What would that be?
Everybody but the referee in this match has passed on. Everybody but the referee and one of the commentators.
That's pretty morbid.
Happy Saturday! Double or nothing in a couple of hours! Keep it tight and bright! Keep it tight and bright, Tom! Keep it tight and bright!
You are running the gamut here.
Oh, getting in there. Come on! Da-da-da-da. Watch some wrestling.
So Owen at ringside doing what he does best, and that's giving us a side to the camera while Neidhart's working. Because that's how Owen's got to carry Neidhart in these matches. He informs us about Bulldog. He's got all the muscles, but he's got no brain. Maybe you shouldn't call attention to the muscles in this time period.
Yeah, let's not bring that to one thing to the forefront.
I do like that Neidhart wins the initial test of strength, because I mean Neidhart is as strong as an ox. That's why he's called the Anvil, because he wants to throw an anvil like 20 yards in a contest, which I can't imagine. I can't imagine the strength it takes to do that.
Is that really where the name comes from?
Yeah. It was like the Stampede Games up in Calgary one year. It was an anvil tossing contest, and either he won or he just threw it like a super long distance. So they start calling him the Anvil after that.
Well, there you go. The more you know. I did not know that part.
Imagine just throwing an anvil like a shot put and goes like 20, 25 yards. Imagine try to fathom the strength it takes to do that.
That's ridiculous.
But as I'm watching Neidhart take down Bulldog, I'm thinking, when this has a strength, I'm thinking, they have a lot of nerve running these IcoPro ads, given how one guy is very egg-shaped, and the other guy looks like he's a cartoon superhero. and he's getting out... I mean, I'm not trying to diminish Neidhart at all here, but he does not have the ideal body type that Vince wants of a superstar. And yet, he probably is strong. He's possibly stronger than Bulldog legitimately.
It is funny how in this match, one of these wrestlers is convex and one of these wrestlers is concave.
Yes.
They could probably fit together in a weird way.
It's like, I always thought it was funny all those years that Vince would just push these muscle-bound guys like he's beefy, he's Jack, pal. And yet the world's strongest man, Mark Henry, was very round. Didn't have like a lot of like muscle definition, but he was just so insanely strong anyway. Because he just had that farmer strength.
He had farmer strength.
You know, where you're as strong as a tractor. You're as strong as like any piece of farm equipment, where you build your strength by doing work all your life. They call it farmer strength.
John, Mark Henry as a tractor. Happy birthday.
Mark Henry could throw a tractor. He could pick it up and throw it at your head like Braun Strowman.
I don't doubt it. Nor would I want to test him.
I'm saying Mark Henry doesn't have the body of like a Paul Orndorff or a Chris Masters or whoever, but yeah, he's probably the strongest guy they've ever had in WWE. It's just kind of like how Vince pushes on the cosmetic muscle man look. Yeah, Mark Henry out muscles them all, even though he doesn't have that same body type. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah, it does.
I'm just saying. So, Neidhart gets a corner whip at one point, and Bulldog bounces off the opposite buckles, and Savage yells, "Where did the ring go?"
It's still there, Savage! You've just blinked!
It's just, like I get what he's going for, but there's an... That's kind of, you're really saying a lot about the intelligence of the audience. It's like, oh, got your nose! When we know you don't. Like, ha-ha, Randy. So Neidhart is using a Cobra Clutch as a rest hold, which really diminishes DiBiase.
It does. It is simple stuff like that does affect a wrestling hold.
Well, you see, Tom, it's just DiBiase's such an expert at it that he can use it as a finish, but Neidhart can't quite get it right, which is why for him it's merely a rest hold.
Ah, clever Trevor. That's pretty accurate.
Savage takes up for Davey by saying, all he's trying to do is put Alpo on the table for his family.
Alpo.
If you ever get Harry Smith on Desert Island Graps, you have to ask him what the meals in that house were like. If he indeed ever got a milk bone for as a treat or whatever.
I will certainly ask the question, because it seems as if that... The only thing that David Boy Smith was concerned was feeding David Boy Smith Jr. soy or almond milk.
Why are we eating dog bones, Dad? Because we're bizarre. So Savage tries to segue to a Princess Diana story, and Vince cuts him off. When Vince doesn't want to hear about a celebrity story, then it's possible that it must be too risque for... these current USA Network standards.
I wonder whether it is just that it's because Savage does this a bit later on in the show. Like, he's obviously been told shoehorn in topicality, but he puts it in the weirdest places. And there is one moment where he does it later on where Vince just kind of, you can almost hear Vince staring at him to go, why have you said that? Why now? So I wonder whether Vince cuts him off because he's like, that's, shut up. There's nothing to do with it. Or whether Vince,
if that's the case, Vince has a lot of goal.
It could. Oh yeah, exactly. But whether or not potentially Vince says, "Well, don't say Diana when Bulldog's in there because it will confuse the audience." That's possible.
It could be that, because there can't be two Dianas. We'll have to change her name to Garrison Smith or something.
Exactly. There is that. I get that vibe from Vince that sometimes there is a bit of a disconnect with meaning, to put it lightly.
I can't believe they made Lance Cade Garrison Cade, because you can't have two Lances.
You can't have two Lances.
What the hell did Garrison come from?
The Garrison, presumably.
Make him like Lou Cade or something.
Lou Cade?
See,
but, Luke. Luke Unsade.
No, you said like his middle name should be R and his first name Nick. Nick Arcade.
Accompanied by his wife, Penny.
Of course, kids, they have no idea what the hell we're talking about.
It's their fault for being young.
That's right. So we get the heat when Bulldog goes over the top rope and Owen pulls the ropes down. There's an obvious edit because Bulldog didn't go over cleanly the first time. So Bulldog buggers his leg, and Brett comes out to try and neutralize Owen. So now Bulldog has an injured knee, Tom. He's going over the ropes. His leg is effed. He would even tell Brett, my leg is effed. That's how effed his leg is.
I'm effed, not again.
What does Neidhart do? works every part of the body other than the leg. He puts the duh in fundamentals. So boy, as Neidhart works the coccyx and the ring finger and all that stuff on Davey Boy, while Bulldog's leg is mangled like he's been in a car wreck, Savage says, and this is a direct quote, "Where's Bob Backlund's dictionary? I want to look up Relentless and see the picture of the anvil."
I see what he's doing. Like, he's... The one thing about Savage at this point, as a commentator, is...
Mm-hmm.
He's been given the instruction book. He's read the instruction book on how to commentate. And he's... Mm-hmm. And what he's doing is, he is word for word, like, reading the rules of the book. But the problem is that there's nothing organic about it. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's doing the right things, but he's doing them in such a non-organic way or in such a clumsy way. But he's doing them by the book. He's getting like he's shoehorning things in that should be there, but they don't feel comfortable.
He thinks he has to fill silence by doing things by the book.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. It's that desire to fill silence. And I'm really glad that the commentators in general for WWE these days don't feel so pressured to fill the silence.
Well, it might have helped Jerry Lawler after a certain Akira Tozawa move if somebody had just dove onto that grenade.
I mean, there is that, to be fair.
But I mean, the silence after that was just like... It was like the stillness of night. Did not bail him out one bit.
They said, "We're going to let you hang on that. That's all yours, mate."
But anyway, we get the Neidhart recliner, which works the leg, I mean head and neck.
Can we call it the Neidhart Reclineheart?
I'm down with that.
Excellent.
Neidhart Reclineheart, okay. So it's a camel clutch, but it's Neidhart making Bulldog humble. And Savage tells us, "Holds like this make me glad I'm a broadcaster." As Vince smiles to himself.
That's
I've
right.
Broken him finally.
You are a broadcaster.
It's your birthright to be an announcer. This is why you're on this earth. So Bulldog, in a moment that I truly did appreciate, after he fights out of the hole, makes the comeback. He gets the vertical suplex, but instead of doing the traditional Davey Boy delayed version, he just does a simple suplex because, you know, his leg is effed. And had he held him up, it would have ruined the heat because it would have showed that his leg was not injured. But alas.
Very true.
During all this excitement, Bob Backlund arrives and distracts Brett. What the point of this is not exactly clear, but while this is going on, Owen runs in for the DQ. Now, having seen a million distraction finishes in the last 5 years alone.
Yes. More than
what
that.
What you're thinking is Backlund's gonna come out and confront Brett, and the referee's gonna get tied up by barking at those two, causing Owen to run in and attack Davey and possibly screw him over so Neidhart can win. But no. Backlund runs out to distract Brett, and Owen, to a modern eye, jumps the gun severely and runs in and just hits Bulldog while the referee's still standing there. And we get a DQ finish.
What a waste of everybody's time. It's almost like... I feel like I was punished for watching that match. I feel like they've gone, "Hey, you know how much the Hearts and the Bulldogs, they had good matches? Well, we're going to take the crap one from both. And they're going to have a one-on-one." And I've gone, "Oh, that's a shame. But okay, I'll watch it." And they go, "You chose to watch it. You failed. You didn't even get a result at the end. We're just going to throw the match out. We're just going to nullify everything. Thanks for the 17 minutes of your life, suckers." Oh, cheers. Thanks for that. That's great. I'm really valued as a fan.
It's like an authority era role.
I genuinely wouldn't have been sad if Neidhart had stole a win over Bulldog, or if Bulldog had power slammed his way through Neidhart. Neither happened. So it's just like, if you were at a point to let either guy lose, don't do the match. This is what bugs me. This is what bugs me. And modern wrestling's just as bad. Like, if you're not at a point where you want to put somebody in a position where they're going to lose, like Dexter Lumis on NXT, I don't think he needed that long match and a loss yet. But they booked themselves into a position where they had to do it. But they didn't. They could have done a number of things. Like, if you don't feel like you're in a position to have two guys wrestle and have a definitive response or an answer or something that builds to something else, maybe, I don't know, then don't do it. Don't do it. I also think, right, and another thing, I also think this match was put together wrong because it was rest holds aplenty. I think this should have just been a hoss fight and I'd have enjoyed it more. Just give it like 6 minutes of Neidhart and Bulldog punching, fighting, scratching, clawing, throwing. That'd have been fine. And then if you do the DQ then, I've at least seen some beastly hoss action. But I just had like two blokes doing headlocks for 20 minutes and then a DQ. I just wouldn't have minded if it had been a 6 minute hoss fight.
Yeah, but, you know, it wasn't really that era where they really considered those things. They just saw it as a way to fill time. They had the biggest match on the show in terms of star power go at least 10 minutes, even when they have a non-finish, because you're keeping Neidhart strong for the house show run. And it was what it was. It's your typical 1994 Raw match without any mind paid to necessarily quality or whatever. It's just it's there to push the future.
It is funny how you say that. Oh, they're just filling time. Like, imagine when we get to like the late noughties where we're filling 3 hours.
If we get that far, I hope we do.
I mean, I may be dead by then, so it'll probably be my my son.
What can Pablo do the intro?
That's what I was talking about. Pablo. Don't look at me like that, buddy. You're taking over this podcast. It is your birthright.
Would Alex want to do the show?
She would. She'd be far more... what's the word I'm reaching for? Negative and angry about Raw at this point than I am. She would be less forgiving. Because I watched this one with Alex in the room, and even Alex was like, why are they doing that? What is that? Why is he there? So it would be an aggressive show.
In fairness, I do the same thing.
I know, but I've got to be the light to the shade. So it'd just be shade and shade.
We come to a vignette that may have inspired a song. I don't know.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
We'll find out later. You see, Tom, I don't know how well you know your American history, but at this point in 1994, Major League Baseball was in a serious pickle because the players' union had gone on strike. They've been on strike since mid-August, and they had not come to a settlement yet with the owners. So thus, there are no baseball playoffs, and now there is no World Series. In 1994, no World Series was played, and baseball fans everywhere became very disillusioned with the sport, something that would remain so until Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa, through the use of copious amounts of growth hormone, had a home run race that brought fans back to the stadiums. But until then, baseball was cooked. And basically, they were in the barrel for a lot of late-night TV show jokes and just a lot of disgust in the American public. Greedy athletes, greedy owners, F them all. So who decides to stick their thumb into the eye of Major League Baseball but WWF Chairman Vince McMahon? We get this charming little video, which Vince proceeds by saying, there's no one on strike in the WWF. It's because there's no union.
I mean, yeah, I was going to say. It's like somebody saying, well, we don't drink hot drinks in our house. No, because you don't have a kettle.
Exactly. So this video, it shows the Sandlot baseball field. And there's a big sign out on the fence that says, no game today. And this kid's out there. And there's no one to play with because I guess all his neighborhood friends are on strike too. Or they've become so disillusioned with baseball that they can't bear to pick up a bat and go play outside. So this kid, he does the tear roll. He's sad there's no World Series and no one's going to play baseball with him. Then Randy Savage shows up. And he says, come on, kid, let's hit a few grounders or whatever it was he said.
I think he just says, come on, kid, let's hit a few.
Well, okay, that works too. And the voiceover, the World Wrestling Federation, our season never ends. And that's why there's going to be so many premature deaths. And anyway, he doesn't say that part, though.
I was going to say, I don't think he goes into that much detail.
And so, on the one hand, it's an okay ad because at this point, baseball deserved whatever it got in terms of ridicule. Because, I mean, you know, these million-dollar athletes, it's like, get out there and play. You know, but at the same time, this comes off a little bit ham-handed and a little bit bitter on WWE. And speaking of bitterness towards sports, you may say, we'll wait till later in the show. They actually tried the same vignette 8 years later, but they only aired it one time in 2002 when there was the threat of another strike in baseball, but they settled quickly that time.
I remember them doing this because it was. I remember the vignette and it had Vince McMahon roll down his window and go, "Oh no, I'm thinking of something completely different." But I do remember them doing something about it.
Yeah, they tried something. It only aired once because, like, right after it aired, the players and the owners came to a settlement, and it saved the 2002 season. But yeah, they were going to try the same thing again because anything we could do to put our foot on somebody's neck in order to stand tall, we're gonna do. But, you know, that's Vince for you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, to be fair, we do the same thing on this show.
That's true. We are standing on their necks. You are standing on others' necks.
But we're not billionaires. We're starving pseudo-artists. Blink the Clown versus Barry Horowitz.
Yay! It's wrestling's second favorite Barry.
Behind Wyndham, I assume?
Yes, and The Shark.
John Tett is not named Barry.
He was in my head. Nice to see Barry Horowitz here.
Always good to see Barry Horowitz, and always happy to hear Vince plug a good movie, in this case, Ed Wood. Because George Animal Steel is going to be in it playing Tor Johnson. We've mentioned on the show before, but if you've never seen Ed Wood, you will love this movie. It is it is basically The Disaster Artist, but way funnier.
It's very, very good. I can't recommend it enough.
So Doink almost neuters himself on a leapfrog. A little late on the jump, or Horowitz's head is too high, one or the other. Either way, it was a close call. Almost got de-doinked. Horowitz gets some offense in here, while Vince goes off on this Lawler Doink storyline. And in the most dramatic voice possible, Vince talks about how Jerry Lawler destroyed Dink's unicycle
he really sold this like it was a terrible thing.
At this point, I'm watching ECW, and I'm watching Cactus Jack spit on a WWE World Tag Team title belt. I'm watching Sabu go through tables. I'm watching guys bleed. And I'm 10 years old, and I'm thinking, this is the coolest stuff in the world. And then I turn on Raw, and here's Vince talking about a unicycle shattering, involving a midget clown and an evil king.
It is a very different world to the one what we grew up in.
I'd like to point out right now that this is around the time period where I stopped watching Nickelodeon and started watching this Seinfeld and Married with Children a lot more.
So you've grown up now. So you're, but the WWF clearly hasn't quite grown up as much as you have.
We're going in opposite directions at this point in time. I have really outgrown this stuff.
And it would take years before they would redress that balance. Like, the one thing that to correlate this with anything, it's the Harry Potter films. And how the Harry Potter movies sort of grew up with the audience. They got edgier and darker as the audience got smarter and more mature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's that cradle to the grave sort of thing where you try to... Where you grow up with a certain generation. But at the same time, at some point you do have to regress and start with someone. You start with a new group of kids, understandably. But for people who want to feast on something that's more for their age group, that's where you lose some of the audience. And that's a big problem from this era here.
It's very true. It's very true.
So it's one gets this nice power slam. And then he goes up top rope, and already I'm cringing because I know it's coming. We get the whoopee cushion with sound effect. And Vince sells it.
Vince and Savage are offenders here who both sell it like Doink farted on impact. And it was clearly a sound effect.
And Vince's like, oh, excuse me. Never forget that this man 3 months earlier was on trial for steroid distribution.
How different. What a difference just a few short weeks make. Jeez. Yeah, this is... And, you know, and there was a line that was chucked in here. That made me die a bit, where he said, Leslie Nielsen would be proud.
Well, actually, I was annoyed by that at first, too. But I remember reading stories that Leslie Nielsen on film sets would have a whoopee cushion on his person and would either annoy or amuse people with it.
That makes sense.
So it's possible he may have had it backstage with him at SummerSlam.
Right. See, in my head, this is what the company's done to me. In my head, they were like, oh, that's great comedy. Leslie Nielsen knows great comedy. He'll appreciate that. That was what I thought they were going for.
Yeah, I thought that too, but then I remember that little anecdote. And it's certainly possible, but... Either way, at this point, just a mere mention of Leslie Nielsen is like PTSD.
Yeah, I'd rather they just never mention it again and just assume it never happened.
Yeah, like a childhood trauma. You'd pretend that it never happened.
Mm-hmm. As it should be. But anyway.
Speaking of trauma, we go to The Undertaker and Paul Bearer. And they're threatening Yokozuna with death on the Heart Attack Tour, which we'll get to that in a moment. Paul Bearer, in the shrillest voice possible, and for him this is saying something, says, the essence of the Undertaker has returned, and you pay!
You've done it now! You've gone and made a big mistake! And I can't allow you to think you could just walk away!
John, I want Undertaker on his American Badass motorcycle with Paul Bearer in a sidecar.
Yes! It is the fait accompli of wrestling photoshoppers. Make it happen, John Eiley, and happy birthday.
You're gonna pray. Dan. Anyway.
Amazing.
So, the camera's inside the casket. Taker closes the casket lid because it's Taker versus Yokozuna around the horn on the Heart Attack Tour. Now, I'm going to pull up the Heart Attack Tour here and look at some of the dates here. Oh, by the way, Todd was on this show because he did a voiceover. And And he annoyed me, so I had to bring it up. Because he mentions Louisville as Todd makes a horrible Louisville Cardinals joke. And even says, he even goes, get it at one point just to make sure that we understood that he was joshing us. So we're in Louisville, Nashville, Tampa, Sunrise, Florida, Baltimore, Landover, and Hershey, PA, which I have been to before and is a very nice town. So I'm going to pull up some of the some of these dates here, and we're going to see what the attendances were for this massive heart attack tour that has been plugged. Now, Louisville and Nashville don't have attendances listed here, but Tampa, Florida at the Sundome, which was the home of the 1995 Royal Rumble. Tommy, what would you guess the attendance might be if you just had to venture a number?
For the heart attack tour, it's in the toilet at the moment. I reckon at a push, 1,100.
Yeah, you really undersold that. Actually, it's 4,500.
Oh, wow. Okay. I'm happy to be wrong on that one.
The next night in Sunrise, Florida, and I have an anecdote for this one here. Oh. Sunrise, I believe, is near Miami. I could be wrong. What would you...
Let me have a guess.
Okay,
Florida's a fair hot spot for the wrestle, so I'm going to say 4,700.
This one, you should have reversed them. This one is 1,300.
Oh, let's. Oh, I thought Florida might be all right overall.
Now for this show, something caught my eye here that I never knew about. And I'm like, that's got to be a misprint. That can't be right. But then I looked into next week's Observer issue, and I discovered, or actually 2 weeks from now, the Observer issues, and I discovered that this is in fact what happened in the opening match of this show. Bob Holly, Bob Sparkplug Holly, defeated in what may be his only WWF match ever, Scott Norton.
Wow. Norton on the payroll for the WWF.
I'm like, it's gotta be Scott somebody else, maybe a Graham Calthon on the site here, just put the wrong name down. But no, here's the anecdote. Scott Norton worked a show on October 9th in Sunrise, Florida, doing a job in the opener to Bob Holly. Think about this. Here's a guy who they wouldn't use in small Oregon indies because he wouldn't put anyone over in front of like 50 or 100 fans, so they wouldn't do programs with him. Here's a guy who held up WCW and ended up walking out because he wouldn't put Sting over on a pay-per-view.
Jeez.
Here's a guy who just a few weeks back wouldn't put Masachono over clean, and they had to do a DQ, which is totally unacceptable to the fans there. And now he puts Bob Holly over in an opener. He must want the job pretty badly, which would be another blow to New Japan that has virtually no foreign talent in the heavyweight division.
That's incredible.
Yes, he would not lose the Sting at Slamboree 93, so the weekend of, he was replaced by the Prisoner, a.k.a. Nails.
Oh, this is where the Prisoner popped up.
Uh-huh, because Scott Norton wouldn't do the J-O-B on the PPV. So after that, Baltimore, 5,000. Landover, 3,800. And Hershey P's attendance is not listed. But that was the one show that Norton worked in that loop. And I didn't even know about it until now, or until I watched this show and took notes. So now we come to what could be the highlight of the show, actually. The King's Court with Yokozuna, Mr. Fuji, and Jim Cornette.
Now Jerry Lawler, we get on his case quite a bit. He did come out with a good line at the start of this. Give the devil his due.
And which line was that again?
It was the one where he was making fun of Doink and Dink and saying, I can't get behind people who dress up in ridiculous costumes just to try and get attention. Who does that? He says, whilst dressed in his full king regalia. It was a lovely, subtle line that I very much enjoyed.
It was very similar to when Jericho yelled at MJF last fall. It's like, what kind of idiot wears a scarf?
Yes, exactly.
The unaware heel is always funny. So he brings out Yokozuna, Cornette, and Fuji, and I gotta ask, just to bring it down for a moment, who did you feel worse for on the own Dark Side of the Ring, Lawler when you realize just how like ghastly wooden he was when he came back from attending the Owen in the ring, or Cornette when he broke down?
I think Lawler. I think the worst actually I felt was for Jim Ross when he talked about the Kevin Dunn thing and Kevin Dunn in his ear. And Jim Ross says, give us an update on... So this is from Dark Side of the Ring, where Jim Ross recants that night. And Jim Ross says, Kevin, can we get an update on Owen Hart? And Kevin Dunn says, Owen's dead. Coming back in 10, 9... Like, what? That bit made me sick. I can't get my head around the lack of... The lack of emotional connection you have to have in order to deliver that kind of information in that kind of way.
Yeah, it's pretty rough. And when I woke up on Wednesday morning, mid-morning, I realized Kevin Dunn was still the top trend on Twitter. And I'm like, well, that's not a good look. Might have pilled the audience here toward how this company might be run. May turn a few people off. I don't know.
Quite possibly.
So Lawler's going on a bit with the jokes, and Vince is like, all right, hurry it along. And he says it several times. He's like really impatient during this segment, and this is like either he's ribbing Lawler or Lawler's was stalling and Vince is taking it out on the commentary. God, he would hate this show with how we stall. So you see, Yokozuna is not afraid of Undertaker, according to Corny. And Taker keeps trying to use this smoke and mirrors and all this ghoulishness to try and get Yoko's goat, but it's not going to work. It's at this point during this very serious angle that Vince wishes Chubby Checker a happy birthday.
Yeah, because that's really on brand with your audience, isn't it? Chubby Checker. Like, you've made childish jokes about Dick's trike being destroyed, and then you're going, oh, it's Chubby Checker's birthday.
How is it Dick's strike? I'm like, what? I'm like, what Dick's strike? Is Nakamura back? But anyway, I gotta say, Yokozuna has this wonderful kimono on. It's got his face as part of the design, but the word sale, S-A-L-E, in different parts on it. And I have no idea what that means in the context of this kimono. I was baffled.
Yeah. I saw that. I thought that was very strange as to why it says sale on the back. Was it a joke?
I have no idea. I will say it looks comfy though.
Very much so.
if that were my size, I'd wear it around the house for sure.
Exactly. If it's comfy.
It looks very comfy. I'll even wear Yoko's because I'm sure it's like a blanket. It's like a Snuggie. So Cornette claims that Taker is scared of Yoko. He tries to make that accusation, but then we learn that Yoko is still afraid of the word casket. And now we're back to this again from 10 months ago. Lola keeps saying the word casket by accident. And Yoko tenses up, huh? Whoa, whoa, whoa. And Cornette's like, don't use that word. He kind of has a phobia that's... We call it the big box. We'll just call it that. Lola keeps accidentally saying casket. And Yoko just wide-eyed. Whoa, whoa, whoa. I got to say, Cornette is going on a rant at one point, and Lola has to actually bite his lip and look the other way because Cornette is just so naturally funny that even a pro like Lola almost corpses on camera. It was pretty funny. So Yoko's had enough of everything, and he just rubs his sweat on the lens for some reason, and now it's all nice and foggy. The camera shot of all four of them in the ring.
Look nice, look like Oprah Winfrey's camera.
The unfocused camera they put on Barbara Walters. Make her look younger.
Every time they cut to her, it's a slightly softer camera. We know what you're doing.
It's like a dream sequence. So the segment finally ends. We've established that Yoko's still afraid of the caskets. And Vince is awful excited to hear someone gasp for their last breath in a casket match.
Savage constantly shouted, casket, 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 throughout this.
Yeah, like I only got slightly like Beavis saying fire.
I only got
fire,
slightly
fire,
annoying,
fire, fire. it's 1994. It's 1994. So we learned that it's Luger versus Bam Bam next week. Okay, that could be semi-promising. And then...
I'd forgotten about this next thing. I mean, I forgot that it existed in 94, but remember what you were saying about the Action Zone and how it was the counter to the NFL's pregame shows because they were taking ratings away from All American Wrestling?
That's it, yeah.
Well, Vince McMahon, ever known for his subtle sense of humor, hits back at them with his Action Zone ad that makes fun of the NFL pregame shows. So we have a guy, this big, chunky guy with a mustache and a cigar in his mouth, named Mike Ditka, which for those of you who know nothing about football, that is a parody of former Chicago Bears coach Mike Ditka, who had become a regular talking head on these morning shows. But they had to call him Ditka in order to make fun of him. I got acne, I doubt Bears. Yes, the old Saturday Night Live Bears fans sketches were about the love of college Ditka. So what's the score going to be? I'm going to say Bears 142, Cowboys negative 7. That's not going to be, ain't going to be that close. Nah, it's just a halftime score. Anyway. So not only is Mike Ditka in this ad, but we have Greg Gumbel, a parody of Greg Gumbel, and Zeon Danders, which is obviously Deion Sanders. And they're parodying the banality and inanity of these incessantly long pregame shows, which I'll give them that. The shows do sometimes stretch for content to fill an hour. And if you miss them, you really miss nothing. But it's how bitter do you have to be to run this ad?
This is very – but do you know what? It's on brand for Vince. This is on brand for Vince. Just digging on other sports that aren't wrestling for whatever reason. I mean, to be honest, as you say, with knowing Vince for who he is, to run an action-packed, as you say, wrestling show up against a sport analysis show, yeah, I get it. I get the mindset. I really do. And then just sort of pushing the elbow right into the ribs by making this advert up totally just brings it home. This is on brand for Vince. I'm not even mad anymore.
Suppose now would be a good time to point out that WWF no longer ran Sunday morning shows as of 2001. Whereas NFL pregame shows have still been on are still on to this day, including the Fox pregame show that still has three of the original four people on its panel 26 years later.
That's it. It says it all, doesn't it?
I'm surprised we didn't have terrible Bradshaw on here or whoever else. Unless you could come up with, I don't know, Jim Limpley instead of Jim Lampley. I don't know. Anyway, Alundra Blaze and Heidi Lee Morgan versus Bull Nakano and Luna Vachon. This was almost a good match. They tried really hard, but there was a few clunky moments in here.
See, I thought this was probably the best match of the night. Considering what's on tonight, it isn't saying a lot.
By default.
Yeah.
It was enjoyable, but there's some spots where it's just like, all right, that was a little off. So was that. And so on and so forth. And I'm wondering, is this the first Luna match we've seen on Raw?
It is, yes. Like we've seen her have like pull apart brawls with Sherry and Alundra Blaze, but we've not seen her actually in the ring wrestling.
Yeah, she's she's gotten physically active, definitely. But this is her first match proper, I believe.
It is indeed, yes.
We get some nice spots. Heidi Lee Morgan gets a nice double leg takedown into it, like an amateur-style bridge. Gets two off of that. Morgan gets beat on for a while Savage goes on a Buddy Ryan tirade. That's more football stuff because they're trying to, you know, we're not bitter, and yet they, you know, keep harping on it. So Morgan gets this step-up victory roll on Nakano for two. And this is where Savage admits that, oh boy, this part. Savage admits he's attracted to Bull Nakano. And okay, that's a little random, but okay. And Vince rebukes him for it. Not for being unprofessional, like you can't date a coworker, but in the sense of, oh, come on, she's hideous, look at her. It's like, so Nakano's gimmick is that she's ugly, according to Vince.
Yeah, that's a bit old hat. It's a shame, because like, the in terms of everything else about this match, It feels progressive. It's a tag team match with multiple people, and just the odd line like that just kind of brings it back down again.
Yeah, it's I think Frodo's without makeup have shown Bull to actually be a very beautiful woman. But Vince, but they're insisted on pushing the fact that this gargantuan heavyweight woman's wrestler has to be ugly because she's not a traditional blonde debutante. And it's a really weird thing that they put out there. It's like, if a fan thinks Bull's attractive, they could think Bull's attractive. They don't need the voice company telling you, like, oh, you'd have to be an idiot to find this woman attractive.
Ugh. Yeah, I didn't like that line.
It's... But it's, as you would say, it is on brand.
On brand. Very on brand for Vince McMahon. The match itself, I you seemed a bit down on it, but I really enjoyed it. I once again want to give top marks to your friend from round the corner, Heidi Lee Morgan, who had an absolute blinder in this.
Yeah, she has very underrated athleticism, as demonstrated on the moves I've mentioned. But, I mean, there were clunky moments in the match, which, okay, they happen, which... Like there's a spot with that come over here where Luna whiffs on a clothesline. She goes like 6 feet over someone's head, and Vince actually does make me laugh by going a clothesline of sorts.
A kind of clothesline thing.
A kind of line. So there's a spot where Morgan misses a splash on Luna, but see, okay, here's what happened. Morgan's getting ready to go for the hot tag, the Alundra Blaze. Now, Luna's, like, in her way, laying down horizontally, but perpendicular to where Morgan is standing. Morgan is kind of torn between doing a move to Luna or diving over her for the hot tag. So she found a way to do both at the same time. She went for a splash, but overshot Luna in spite of the fact that her feet were about 4 inches from Luna's arm. So she jumps over Luna. It's like the worst collision detection for a video game you've ever seen in your life. She lands on her abdomen and then just jumps up and makes a tag. It's like she tried to do two things and got confused and then did that. So Blaze is a house of fire. She kind of whips on a hair drag. Bull does the monster spot where she suplexes two opponents at the same time. And Vince reminds us, she's not pretty, but she is strong.
It's okay. Again that comment of like, oh, she's not pretty. I say, well, it's... They don't need to talk on that sort of thing.
Yeah, he's installing the glass ceiling as low as he possibly can over her porcupine hair.
Mm-hmm.
So Morgan keeps running in to help out because I guess this is Lucha rules now. And then Blaze pins Vachon with an awesome bridging German suplex. I think Alundra Blaze is made of elastic.
She really is. She was that suplex was a beautiful finish. Beautifully done.
I ragged on the match going in. Like I said, it wasn't terrible, but there was just a few clunky moments that it wasn't smooth, but it was enjoyable enough.
Yeah.
So it was fine. It was best thing on the show, as you've indicated.
Well, best thing up until now.
Oh, you're right. How could I forget? Well, here's King Kong Bundy stomping through New York City.
Oh, now... Last week, I made King Kong Bundy's vignette promo video, the album art for the podcast. And I ain't going to lie, I've done it again this week. Because the image of King Kong Bundy green screen scaling up the Empire State Building and swatting away planes is just so early 90s, it actually hurts.
Well, it's... I enjoyed it for what it was.
I loved it. I loved it. I loved it.
If you're going to be cheesy, be cheesy.
Yeah, you go hard or you go home.
So all Bundy was missing was the girl in his hand, which... I like to imagine he grabbed the con of it's like, no, pick an attractive woman.
The sad thing is that they're billing King Kong Bundy as this giant. And it's at this point where I go, John, Photoshop King Kong Bundy climbing up the Empire State Building. But I don't need to, because they've done it for us this week.
Yeah, they've taken the work out of it for us because
obviously WWF knew it was John Eilish's birthday, and they went, "We're going to give him less to do."
But not to worry, we've given him plenty to do.
We have done indeed. How excited are you about the return of Bundy next week?
Well, I got to stick up for my fellow Jersey people here. I'm very happy to see Bundy again. And even though this is far from his golden run, I'm always happy to see King Kong Bundy around.
I think as long as he's...
I'll tell you what.
Oh, go on.
Let's see. A very underrated promo, if you watch his stuff with Bobby Heenan. He knew how to sell himself.
Okay.
But go on.
I was going to say that I'm intrigued to see how well he fits, if at all, into the new generation.
Well, spoiler, not very well.
Either way, he's back next week. Go out your way to see King Kong Bundy ascending the Empire State Building using a green screen. I bet they had fun on the day they filmed this.
In a small coincidence, I haven't seen that new generation ad anymore with all the old guys and the grayed out background compared to the new generation guys.
Oh, it's almost like they've realized they've got so many old boys still on the books. It's probably best not to highlight the fact that they are all young.
Oh, probably. I think that if Hogan called next day and says, "Hey, I'll come back," and they're like, "All right, Scrappy Ad Hawk's coming back."
It's true. So
we get the ad from the it's that church commercial with that lustful woman in a confessional. She's so turned on by Razor and Sean, but definitely not Bull Nakano. Oh no.
Get her off my screen.
This should happen next week where it's like a guy says, "Bless me, Father, for I have sinned. I have had impure thoughts about Bull Nakano." And the next scene is just him being, having like, you know, shock aversion therapy or something. Where they're trying to fix him from his, like, "All right, we won't tell anybody about this, but, you know, you should probably lay low for a while. Because, you know, you're obviously insane." I'm sorry, I went off on a tangent there.
That's okay, mate. Welcome back.
So we have footage of Bob Backlund losing the belt in 83 to the Iron Sheik. Always happy to see Sheiky Baby on Raw, even in archive form. Of course, the towel was thrown in for surrender because Backlund had an injured neck and was hopelessly entrenched in the camel clutch. So Arnold Scutlin threw in a towel on his behalf, thus surrendering the belt after a six-year or four-year run, depending on which version of history you ascribe to. And perhaps Arnold Scullin will be dropping in very soon.
Ooh, that's a hot tease.
And, you know, the real star of the Piledriver video, Arnold Scullin.
What was he doing in the video?
He went into the, what are those outdoor bathrooms called again?
Outhouses.
Not outhouses, but like a porta potty or a porta john.
Okay.
He went into that with a dirty magazine while smoking a cigar.
Oh, that was him, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Bob Backlund versus Gary Scott. I had a realization while Backlund was entering the ring and with Themis Clarity's walking around with a placard that she and him both ran for office in the state of Connecticut at different points.
Oh, God, they did, didn't they?
Yes, Backlund ran, I think, for Senate or Congress in 2000, whereas she's been a congresswoman since 1998 in that state.
Oh, man. Stuff like that just makes me smile. Like, I love the fact that they were the two very different sides of the track on this episode of Raw, both going for the same job.
How did Bob Backlund not get elected?
I know, right? I think he'd be incredible.
He's run for many different offices. I'd vote for him. I don't care what party he is.
Tell you what I like.
What his views are. Just...
Tell you what I like with this, away from the political side of it, is like how we are getting the two sides of Bob Backlund every week. And like, and as he walks out to the ring, we see the one side where he kind of like does that sort of jog to the ring. The crowd are booing him, but he's smiling and he's waving. He's giving it all this. He's great. And then the bell rings and things change.
Yeah, he was like Waylon Mercy before Waylon Mercy.
Mm-hmm.
Vince wonders aloud if the towel around Backlund's neck is part of his entrance wardrobe. Is that same towel from 1983 that was thrown in to surrender his belt?
Ooh.
Nice little touch there. I'll give him that.
Nice.
The Backlund is still possibly bitter and keeps that towel as a reminder of that fateful day, the day after Christmas of 83, when What was his was lost. So we get an arm drag. Backlund does the happy Backlund dance that I love so much. If you can't smile at the happy Backlund dance, then you have no soul.
All is dead.
So Gary Scott gets a takedown on Backlund, and he works the crowd. He's out wrestling Bob. And then we get something that vaguely resembles MMA. Scott rides Backlund on the back. He gets the double hook in where he gets both legs in front of Backlund's legs. But Backlund maneuvers out of it to reverse, gets a toe hold. Scott is somewhat entrenched in his hold. He's in pain. And then Backlund pulls him up. I believe a swing was missed. Shikoing applied. Scott submits before the body scissors is even applied. Backlund snaps, keeps the hold applied, wrenches him a bit, breaks the hold and stares at his hands again. Then Bob makes sure Scott's okay, then jogs around the ring, and then he leaves.
He was wild.
That was the second best match of the show.
He was wild at this point.
Bob Backlund is fantastic.
Now, I'd say, here's the thing that nearly ruined this for me a little bit. Well, it didn't ruin it for me, because Bob Backlund was brilliant. Like, the whole, like, mental gear shift of Backlund, nice and jolly coming out, gets a little bit angry when things aren't going his way in the match, and then just refuses to let go of the chicken wing at the very end. And then we get to the bit at the end where, just as he's let go, Savage is talking on commentary. And it takes away from what is currently happening in the ring, which is what really frustrates me, is because as Backlund is finally pulled away, Savage is on commentary, and he's dropping in some sort of some modern news bit, like he feels like he's right to do. But it just doesn't fit in what is happening, where Savage is talking about, oh God, what was he even talking about? It was just some weird topical nonsense here we go. He was talking about somebody being the new Supreme Court, the new Justice Stephen Breyer. And he's tried to relate it to what's happening with Backlund. But it's all you're doing is dumbing down the cool thing that's happening with Backlund by trying to make it topical.
Don't you see what's going on here, Tom?
I don't.
Savage has tried to impress Vince by playing his game. But he can't even do that right.
Oh, no.
And that, I think, was the silver bullet. That, I think, was the final nail.
This is where Savage is trying to nail this commentary thing. And by trying too hard, he's actually got a bit worse.
And that's the realization that I can't win here. I have to start fresh. I need a new lease on life. That's it. I'll go to the AWA wave. I'm not around anymore. It's like, all right, Hulk, I know we don't like each other, but we can make money again. So how's about I bring my Slim Jim money to Uncle Ted down here and I start fresh? Because we have 4 shows left with Randy Savage on commentary.
Oh, man.
And then he vanishes.
Does that mean I have to change the intro?
Nah, keep Randy in for a little bit, because we know we don't ascribe to Vince's view of reality.
That's true. We'll keep him in for a bit longer.
But speaking of Vince's view of reality, I think now might be a good time to play a little song to kind of sum up one part of this week's show. And if you're a fan of The Simpsons and you love the classic Simpsons, like season 3 Simpsons, perhaps a certain Simpsons that involves some Major League Baseball players, you might have heard this song before, or at least a version of it. We go now to our wonderful friend, our treacherous troubadour, as he were, not Elias, this guy, our pal Strummerwitz, who is going to sing about wrestling, albeit in a very, shall we say, American pastime kind of way. And not only is Strummerwitz on this song, but so is his sister, Sydney. Enjoy.
Vince McMahon is joyous. The strike, it annoys us, with British Bulldog shouting all the while. Doink the clown's whoopee cushion reeks a pile. Only a month of the Macho Man quits in style. We're talking wrestling. And B-Town's like Poughkeepsie talking wrestling. Duke Drewsy and the Anvil. Lex Luger's guy wrestles for assault. Samu and the fish he's eating raw. We're talking Diesel. McMahon thinks he can draw. We're talking wrestling. And B-Town's like Poughkeepsie talking wrestling. Duke Drewsy and the Anvil. Lex Luger's guy wrestles for us all. Samu and the fish he's eating raw. We're talking Diesel. McMahon thinks he can draw.
Hey!
Talking wrestling. See, it's catchy.
See, we didn't get enough Simpsons references in this week. So I'm glad that we've got it covered in song form.
Isn't it wonderful that the next generation of people after us appreciate old Simpsons?
Thank goodness they do, because somebody has to. But the old generation as opposed to the new.
It's got to stay part of, part of the lexicon forever, I think.
I think it certainly will. So that's Raw for this week, then.
Yes, next week we have Bam Bam versus Luger. And at the very end of the show, we actually have Brett commenting on his conversation with Backlund earlier in the night. It's just Brett backstage. He talks about how he says there's a dozen guys who've earned title shots before Backlund. I want Brett to name them.
Virgil. Neidhart.
Scott Norton.
1-2-3 Kid.
Savage. Scott Norton. As Vince goes, cut him off right now.
Bull Nakano. She's too ugly.
For her face. Nakano! Nakano! At last, you've got a push! Dun. Anyway.
Fret not. Backlund and Brett is coming, whether he wants it or not.
Vince calls Brett the fightingest champion ever, and some say the greatest. But apparently not Vince.
Oh, when some say, that normally means I don't agree.
Some would say that I shouldn't own the company anymore. Some would say that I shouldn't be running Raw.
Some would say I should let Savage wrestle.
Some would say I should have been found guilty. But yes, that was this week's show, in which Bulldog versus Neidhart was the worst match of the four.
Oh, man. It sucks. But you know what doesn't suck? You, for sticking it out this long for another week. Until next time, we are together. He is at JRH Writing. I am at Tom Campbell. Together, we are at Cultaholic on Twitter. Don't forget to join us. Put a dot over Nakano. Love you, bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.